Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Today on Residue, we will be discussing the truth behind the movie Stuck, starring Mina Suvari. And before we get down to some business, just wanted to remind you that you can follow me on Instagram at Residue Podcast, TikTok at Residue, a true crime podcast, and Facebook, Residue, a true crime podcast. And you know what I always say, the best thing you could possibly do for any podcast that you love is leave a 5-star review or just a positive review. And damn, you guys have been leaving some stellar reviews, and I'm going to read a couple of them to you right now. So this one is actually on Spotify, and this is from Shannon. Hi, Shannon. Shannon writes, I'm obsessed with this podcast. I found an episode on accident and was immediately hooked. I binge listened from episode 1 on Spotify to the present episode. You do an incredible job telling the story in a form that can actually be pictured. Thank you for all the work you put into every story. You are so appreciated. You are so appreciated, Shannon. You rule. And then over on Apple, we have a review from Carla. 5 stars, movies and true crime. Me, oh my. Oh my God, Carla, you're so cute. I found the podcast via an Instagram reel and was hooked instantly. A combination of two of my favorite interests told by a great storyteller. Thank you. With a very pleasant voice. Oh my God, you're so nice. I'm sold. I am enjoying listening to all the old episodes while I anticipate the new ones. Oh my God. I love all of you. And don't forget, if you would love some stickers and a thank you note, just DM me your address or email me. And I do have stickers going out right now. I know a few of them are a little late. I have them coming. So if you did give me your address and you are awaiting the stickers, do not worry. They are on the way. Thank you guys so much for all of the support. It means the absolute world to me. You are all so amazing. Residue forever. Before we begin, you know that I must warn you that listener discretion is always advised. Stuck is a 2007 thriller film directed by Stuart Gordon and starring Mina Suvari and Stephen Ray. Now, the movie is inspired on the true story of Gregory Glenn Biggs. This film premiered on May 21st, 2007 at Cannes, and it was later adapted into a Bollywood film called Accident on Hill Road. There's a tagline for the movie Stuck that says, two destinies are about to collide. Now, the plot is about a young woman who commits a hit and run and then finds her fate tied to her victim. This is a true story. They do change names in the film. So, Mina Suvari is actually playing Chantel Mallard, but they change her name to Brandy Bosky. She plays a nursing student whose life seems to be going well until one reckless night changes everything. The movie highlights themes of selfishness, fear, moral failure, and Mina Suvari's character is not portrayed as purely evil at first, but just this ordinary person who makes a horrific decision and then continues to justify it. This reflects the film's larger message that people under pressure can act in shockingly inhumane ways to protect themselves. Okay, the big question in this movie Stuck is, why was Mina Suvari cast in the role of Chantel Mallard? According to this ABCnews.com article, Chantel Mallard is a Black woman, Mina Suvari is a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman, but she does wear cornrows to play the role of Brandy. Now, Victoria Rowell, she's a television and film actress. She told ABCnews.com that just because this true life story is so abysmal does not mean we don't want to play the part. And if Denzel can play American Gangster, then Tandy Newton, Victoria Rowell, Angela Bassett, Jada Pinkett Smith, and Audra McDonald would bring an authenticity to this role if given the opportunity. Now, Stuck is listed as a dark comedy thriller, and I'm going to read a review for you by somebody named Bunny on Letterboxd. They write that Stuck is loosely based on a true story, and it pretty nicely explores how ordinary people react when stuck in a situation they don't want to be in, and how they would act like monsters just to get out of this situation. Mina Suvari's character, Brandy, was the best part of the movie. The way her character starts behaving as the plot moves forward, and she was just so bizarre and crazy, and the fact that she is a hospice worker makes it even more disturbing. Stuck, in my opinion, is a bit of an underrated flick that deserves more attention. And Stuck does receive a 73% critic on Rotten Tomatoes, but a 54% audience score. And you can see Stuck currently streaming for free on Tubi. There is absolutely nothing funny about this story. And before we begin, I'm just going to let you know this is horrific. I can't even believe when you tell people that this happened, they don't even believe you. They're like, are you kidding? Nobody would do that. Well, somebody did. So here we go. Here is the true story behind the murder of Gregory Glenn Biggs. October 27th, 2001, Fort Worth, Texas, a 911 call comes in. A body is found in Cobb Park. And this park has a bad reputation. One of the police officers on the crime scene that day says that 911 calls come into the office on the daily regarding Cobb Park. It is not unusual for dead bodies or stolen cars to be found in this park. When police arrive, they notice that rigor mortis has already set in, and the body is covered in shards of glass. And there were also tire marks next to the body. Now, the body was sitting on a bench. So, at first glance, this looks like he was a homeless person that was possibly struck by a car while asleep in a park. The police call in the traffic investigation unit to investigate this scene. They do find out that the victim had ID on him. They pull out his ID, and his name is Gregory Glenn Biggs. Gregory Glenn Biggs was born August 16, 1964. He was 37 years old. He was a father to a 17-year-old son named Brandon Biggs, and at the time of his death, he was living at a homeless shelter. Now, Gregory was the type of person to give you the shirt off of his back. He could make friends anywhere, everywhere, and as his son said, he didn't have a lot of friends, but he was very friendly, and you knew exactly where you stood with him. He was a solid and simple man. Gregory was self-employed as a bricklayer, and his truck was very important to his work. He needed his truck to get back and forth to the jobs, but he helped his girlfriend pay some bills. His girlfriend wrecked her vehicle and she needed some money to fix her car. So Gregory, being this, you know, very generous man that he was, he gave her all the money that he had so that she was able to have a vehicle. But that in turn caused Gregory to lose his truck, which in turn caused him to lose his job. And then he lost his apartment. He couldn't pay any of his bills. He couldn't get back on track. And at the time of his death, Gregory was unhoused. He was staying in a homeless shelter and he was trying to get his life pieced back together. Gregory's autopsy revealed that he had broken legs, a broken ankle, a major laceration across his lower abdomen, scratches all over his body, and lividity on his shoulders. Now, lividity is the reddish-purple discoloration of skin caused by gravity pooling blood in dependent body parts after death. This is a key forensic indicator. It helps determine time of death and if a body was moved. So the medical examiner can tell that Gregory was in a different position when he died and then moved to another location. Gregory had a 17-year-old son, and his 17-year-old son, Brandon, had to arrange his father's funeral. 3 or 4 months goes by. The investigation has stalled. This case is going to go cold. Finally, a tip comes in. It's this woman. She says that she was at a party. Her friend was at this party. Her friend was a little wasted, and this girl was bragging about how she, quote, hit a white man. And she's laughing about it. And she says, I drove home with him, stuck in my windshield, and let him die in my garage. Now, this woman that called into the police station, she got home. She told her mom. Her mom's like, you got to call the cops. So they call the cops. Thank the Lord for this woman. And the police get a search warrant for Shante Mallard's home. Police arrive at Shante's front door. She opens the door. She's not even surprised. She doesn't even ask them why they are there. She just lets them in. And without even questioning her, Shante says, I didn't mean to hit him. Shante Mallard was a 25-year-old nurse's aide, and she came from a good family, a really supportive family. This was a woman that knew right from wrong. And now police officers are standing in her home, and they want to go look in her garage because they want to see if her Chevy Cavalier is parked inside of that garage. And yes, it is. And there is a huge hole in the front windshield. There's hair. There's blood. There is also one bloody fingerprint on the side door, and that bloody fingerprint would turn out to be Gregory Biggs' fingerprint. And the theory is that Greg was actually stuck inside of that windshield by himself in the dark in that garage, and he was half alive trying to pull himself out of that window. And how the hell did this happen? What's Shante Mallard's version? Well, she tells police that day that she went clubbing. She had 2 drinks. She had no drugs, nothing, just 2 drinks. And she says she believes somebody slipped something into one of her drinks because she felt weird. She felt wobbly, but she drove herself home anyway. And on the way home, on the freeway, she hit a man and she panicked because of the drugs. She doesn't take these kind of drugs. She doesn't know what was in her drink. She panicked. So she drove home with the man stuck in her windshield. I'm talking head first. In her windshield, his head facing down into her passenger seat while glass is stuck in his abdomen. She is driving full speed while this man is in her car, and she goes straight to her house and parks right in her garage, and she shuts the door, she locks the door, she turns off the light, goes into her home, sits on the kitchen floor and cries, and leaves Gregory stuck in her windshield, still alive. She tells officers that after she went into her house and she sat there and she cried a little bit, you know, for herself. She was thinking about herself. She then called her on-again, off-again love interest, a man by the name of Vaughn. And Vaughn came over and Vaughn took care of everything. She did nothing else after this. She did the hit. She did the run. But she is blaming all of that on the strange drug that must have been placed in her drink. She has no idea. She didn't go get checked out to see if she did have drugs in her system. She just says she felt wobbly. She called Vaughn. Vaughn took care of the rest. She doesn't have any idea what else he did. Now they're trying to find Vaughn, you know? They're even asking her friends, her family, who the hell is this Vaughn guy? She says he's an ex-boyfriend. Nobody knows what she's talking about. They're thinking, like, wait a minute, did she make Vaughn up? Is she George Glassing us right now? Because nobody knows who the hell this Vaughn guy is. Now they can't find Vaughn, but they do start talking to Shante's friends, and they have a witness, Tittalisi Fry. She goes by the name T. They're going to bring T in for questioning. And now in Texas, all felonies are presented to a grand jury, so they do bring in witnesses, and so they want to talk to T. T is Shantae's best friend from work. They're work buddies. They work at the nursing home together. So T testifies that her BFF Shantae showed up at her house the morning after hitting Greg Biggs. That's all she knows. That's the end of the story. But police are kind of on to T. They believe she knows more than she's telling them. And she's testifying in front of a grand jury. So they believe she's lying. They subpoena her cell phone records and they find out that she was talking to Shantae all night. She didn't first see Shantae the morning after the hit and run. She was talking to her all night. In fact, the two of them hung out the night before. So now it is 5 months after Greg's body was found, and T is brought back in front of a grand jury. She is told, listen, we will give you immunity if you tell the truth because we know you're lying. We know you were talking to Shantae all night. Do you want to go to jail for something that she did, or do you want to tell us the truth? So she tells them the truth, and she says that on October 25th, 2001, it's 11 p.m. at night, Shantae comes over to T's house. They hang out, they get dressed up, and then they go to Joe's Big Bamboo Bar. It's an adult nightclub. They have two or three drinks, they close down the bar, and they go home. Around 2:30 a.m., they both leave the club. Shantae goes her way, T goes her way, and around 3 a.m., only a half an hour later, Shantae calls T and says, pick me up. And she whispers it, and T's like, what? And she's like, pick me up. So T leaves her own home at 3 in the morning, goes to Shantae's house. Shantae runs outside, doesn't let T in the house. She jumps in the car and she says, drive. And T starts driving. And the two of them drive around for about 2 hours. They're just talking. And then T says Shantae wanted to go home. About 2-3 hours later, she brings Shantae home. And then she says, can you come into my house for a little bit? And T's like, why? Okay. So she goes in with her. She goes into the garage and shows her Greg's body inside of that windshield. He is still stuck inside of that windshield. And now Greg has died. So police believe that Shantae actually kept T away from the house until Greg did pass away, until Greg did die, so that there really wasn't anything she could do to get him help. She didn't try once to get him help. In fact, police actually went through from the spot that Greg was hit all the way to Shantae's home, and they counted the number of payphones, the number of hospitals, the number of urgent cares, any place that she could have stopped. And it was a lot. I don't have the exact number. Sorry. I should have got the exact number. Sorry, guys. But it's a lot. It's enough to be like, hey, why didn't you stop at least once and try to get some help? And then you go off and you hang out with your friend all night and you still don't get help. So, okay, T is seeing this and she's like, Shantae, you have to call 911. What are you doing? And Shantae's like, no, I refuse to do that. Okay, so that's T's side of the story. But what happened after that? What happened after Greg died? How was his body moved? And who is Vaughn? Well, they're about to find out who Vaughn is because a person calls the anonymous tip line and they say, hey, listen, you know this Vaughn guy you're looking for? That's not his real name. His real name is Cleet Jackson. And police track down Cleet Jackson and he tells the police that, yeah, I did. I helped Shantae move the body and my cousin, Herbert Tyrone Cleveland, he also helped. Now, these two men had criminal histories. I mean, Cleet just got out of prison. He was just released. And so they're facing a lot of time. But if they strike a deal with the prosecution, their sentence will be lowered. So, of course, these two are going to strike a deal. And they tell the truth. They are charged with tampering with physical evidence, and they will be given 9 and 10 years in prison if they testify against Shantae Mallard. G. June 23rd, 2003, Shante Mallard's trial begins, and it is a media circus. This isn't just local news. This is national. This is international. People cannot believe that this woman did this. And the judge says, yeah, we will allow cameras in the courtroom. Not only did T and Clee both testify against their friend Shante, but the Tarrant County medical examiner testified that had Shante taken Gregory to a hospital, he would have recovered from his injuries. He would not have died. On day one of Shante's trial, she pleaded not guilty to murder, but guilty to FSRA, which is failure to stop and render aid. Now, her BFF T is going to testify against her. And remember when I told you that T had to testify in front of two grand juries? She lied both times to both of those grand juries. She wanted to save herself. She didn't want to admit that they did take drugs that night. So T's story was all a lie. Not all of it. Some of it was true. So let me tell you what really happened that night that T and Shante hung out. Now, she gets on the stand and she says that around 10:30, Shante came over, they had a drink, they split an ecstasy pill, and then they smoked a joint. So she left out that part. And then they did go to the adult nightclub, and they did leave at the times that she said they left, about 2:30 a.m. They both got home around 3 a.m. She did whisper on the phone, like T said, Shante did call T and say, come get me. Now, they're thinking, during this trial, if she's going to whisper on the phone, and Shante did whisper, T says that very adamantly, yes, she was whispering. She was whispering because Greg was still alive in the garage. And so the prosecution is going to use that. T also says that she did go inside of the garage. She did look at Greg trapped inside of that window. She says that she saw the backside of a body lodged out of a window. And the whole time that T is testifying, Shante looks angry as shit. She is just like, you bitch, getting up there and telling on me. And this is where I have to say, how selfish is Shante? Not only is she on trial right now for murder, for killing a man, but she just got everyone she knew involved in this, didn't she? Because I'm telling you what, my friend calls me at 3 a.m. and she's like, can you come get me? First of all, no. Didn't we just go home? We were drinking all night. Second of all, why? You're going to need to tell me why. I'm not just going to blindly drive over there and try to pick you up. Sorry, guys. And when you get there and she tells you what did happen, would you not be so pissed off that she involved you in this? And now, why wouldn't you immediately go and call the police? Because I'm sorry, I don't know of anyone that I'm not going to go and call the police for, because you just hit a man with your car. You called me at 3 a.m. and made me drive over here. And now you're making me look at a dead body stuck in your car window. And you want me to shut my mouth? Don't sit there in the courtroom giving me a dirty look. I should be giving you a dirty look for involving me in this shit. Literally, the nerve of this woman drives me insane. I am like raging with how selfish this woman is. So after she involves her best friend in this mess, she then calls Cleet, who we know as Vaughn, to help her dispose of the body. And Cleet gets up on the stand to testify, and his testimony is very emotional. He regretted everything. And he testified that I just got out of prison. I just got my life right. And then Shante involved me in this. Another person that she just didn't give a shit about, you know? And now and granted, everyone makes their own decisions. He did not have to help her. He did not have to do that. I understand that. But she also didn't have to get him involved in this either. But he is crying on the stand and he talks about how he disposed of Greg's body. And it's horrifying. He says he first called his cousin, Tyrone, because he needed help. And Tyrone helped him, another person involved in this, and they wrap Greg's body in a blanket. They tie the blanket up, and Cleet says that he actually apologized to Greg while he was wrapping him up. I mean, Greg has already passed, but he said he whispered, I'm so sorry. All of this just It's so hard even telling you this story because I cannot believe that people went through with this. And then they say that Shantae was with them every step of the way. She made the decisions. She was the one that actually carried the knife that they used to untie Greg's body from the blanket when they arrived at Cobb Park. Shantae even said, hey, how about instead of leaving him at the park, maybe we could burn his body? We should just burn him. And Cleet said, no. Because let's put him out in public where his family can find him so that they can bury him. I mean, the thought process going on in everyone's mind during this entire situation is just mind-blowing. So many people made so many fucking stupid decisions. And now Shantae's defense is going to try to say none of this was her fault. None of it. It was the drugs, it was the alcohol, the ecstasy. She wasn't used to taking ecstasy. She didn't know how that was going to make her feel. None of this is fully her fault. Now, in Shantae's police statement, she said, I think I was coming home around the bend from Loop 820 before Village Creek, and all of a sudden, bam, he was just there. I realized that it was a person I had hit, and he had come through the right front windshield of my car, and I was scared and terrified, and the car didn't even slow down. He was on my car and stuck through the right front windshield. I parked my car in my garage, and I put the garage door down. I wanted to take him to the hospital, but I was so scared. One of the most interesting aspects to this trial was the fact that the prosecution actually brought Shantae's car into the courtroom. They brought that car in piece by piece. They took it apart so that it was able to fit into the courtroom. And you can see some of this footage on Kelly Siegler's true crime series, Prosecuting Evil. Now, I have the link in my show notes. If you remember, we talked about Kelly Siegler back when we did the episode about the movie The Blue-Eyed Butcher, and how in that case, Kelly Siegler was the prosecutor, and she did that epic move where she brought the actual bed that was involved in the murder into the courtroom. And blood stained and everything, the bloody mattress, the bloody bed, she brought it in for the jury to look at. And in this true crime series, Prosecuting Evil, that Kelly Siegler hosts, she says, I'm very familiar with bringing physical evidence into a courtroom. And she's just so iconic. So they wanted to bring the courtroom alive with evidence. That's just such a killer move by the prosecution, just to see how close the driver's seat is to the passenger seat. They wanted the jury to look at that and say, oh my God, she is driving that car and Gregory's head is right there. His half of his body is inside of the car, leaning onto the passenger seat right directly next to her as she drove all the way home. She's sitting there while he's bleeding out and she's watching him die. One of the more emotional days of trial was when Gregory's son, Brandon, got on the stand. And Brandon was now 20 years old, testifying to how great of a man his father was. And he would never do anything to harm anyone. And after Brandon's testimony, the jury deliberated. After closing statements, the jury goes in to the deliberation room, and they're only in there for 1 hour. That's all it took them to find Shantae Mallard guilty of murder. And this was a unanimous decision. And after this happened, the defense called Shantae Williams to the stand. And they wanted the jury to see that she was a good person, because now the jury's going to hand down the sentence. And for what she was convicted of, what she was found guilty of, Shantae can serve anywhere between 4 to 99 years. So basically, she could get life in prison. And now her defense team wants the jury to hear her speak, see that she is actually a good person. And she gets up there on the stand and she says, I have put people through pain and I am so truly sorry. I am so sorry, Brandon. And she looks right at Gregory's son. She was selfish and she did selfish things. She made selfish decisions. You can tell when she's sitting on the stand and she is crying and telling Brandon she's sorry. You can tell that she truly is sorry. but you still have to face the consequences of your actions. So she was sentenced to 50 years. Brandon Biggs was allowed to make a victim impact statement, and it was a very emotional statement. He got up on the stand and he said, "No winners in a case like this. And just as we lost my father, Greg, you will lose your daughter. And to Shantae, I would like to say that I will accept your apology, but in return, you must accept my forgiveness. I forgive you, but consequences are still owed." Shantae Mallard will be eligible for parole in March of 2027. That is exactly 1 year from today. People were so moved by Brandon's forgiveness, such a young man able to be so forgiving of someone that took away his parent. So I wanted to read you something from deathpenaltyinfo.org. And this news article was titled, "Victim's Son Awarded Scholarship from Prisoners on Death Row." This was posted on October 23rd, 2003. It was updated on March 14th, 2025, 2 years after Brandon Biggs first expressed forgiveness for Shantae Mallard, the woman who killed his father in a nationally publicized Texas murder. He has received a $10,000 college scholarship from Prisoners on Death Row. The scholarship is funded through advertising and subscriptions to Compassion. This is a 2-year-old newsletter edited by and featuring articles by death row inmates across the nation. Brandon Biggs, whose father was struck by a car on a Fort Worth highway and left to bleed to death, is the third murder victim's family member to earn this award. During Mallard's trial, Biggs expressed his forgiveness and he told her family, "There's no winners in a case like this. Just as we all lost Greg, you will be losing your daughter." During the scholarship presentation, he added, "If love is what makes the world go round, compassion makes it sincere." Through Brandon's actions, through the way that Brandon carries himself through life, you are able to see what a great person Gregory Biggs was. And the real horror behind this entire story, the horror behind Shantae Mallard and her actions isn't just that she murdered a man, but it's also the lasting pain for Brandon, the victim's son. It's also the way that her selfish choices dragged others, her best friend, her ex-boyfriend, Clee. She dragged them into this tragedy with her. Just the selfishness is beyond belief. The story of Gregory Biggs inspired so many TV series and movies. I mean, we have the 2007 movie Stuck. There was a Law and Order episode about Gregory's case called Darwinian. In season 2 of the TV show Fargo, Kirsten Dunst, she plays Peggy Blomquist, and she hits Kieran Culkin's character, Rye Gerhardt, with her car, and then she drives back home with him stuck through her windshield. That was inspired by Gregory's case. There's also a third season of the Fox show 911, where a woman hits a homeless man after crashing into him with her car. He's lodged into the windshield of her car. I mean, his story inspired so many different stories that we see on TV today. In the end, the story of Gregory Biggs and Shantae Mallard, it isn't about just one tragic death. It's also about the choices that followed, the lives that were affected, and how one single act of selfishness can leave a lasting impact on everyone it touches. Stay safe and stay paranoid. Residue is created, hosted, written, researched, edited, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope to see you again next Tuesday.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.